This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
7:43, I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning. Anthony Reich, good morning to you. How are you? Anthony Reich, let's just try that again. Oh, seem to be having a little bit of a problem with that.
Hello?
Oh, there we go. Anthony, now I can hear you. How are you doing?
Boker Tov, Chodesh Tov. It has certainly been a busy week. What with the public holiday in Saudi Arabia after they beat Argentina in the World Cup, and with the Iranian commander threatening to kidnap and enslave Benjamin Netanyahu. Apparently the plan is to kidnap Netanyahu and to frog march him to Iran wearing a leash and a slave collar. That is apparently what the Iranian revolutionary guard.
Wait, so this is the is the Iranians, not the Israeli political left.
Well, to cooperate on this particular challenge. But no, this is the Iranians, absolutely. But of course, the irony is that what's happening in Iran, or not in Iran, but to Iranians, is that in Syria, a senior Iranian person who's apparently associated with drones and with all of that technology died in a roadside incident in Syria, Israel being blamed for that. So far, their plan to frog march Netanyahu wearing a leash and a collar is not really working out so well for them. But of course, it's been a busy week with events in Jerusalem as well. We had that live update yesterday, breaking news as I was talking to you guys. And we've now had the opportunity to look back a little on the events in Jerusalem and general events yesterday. And the first thing I would like to...
Oh, Anthony, the line is just not a good one, and you seem to have disappeared. Anthony, are you still with us? Nope, we are having a bit of a problem with... And it was like a cliffhanger, wasn't it? Because Anthony was saying, the first thing that I do want to say is... Boom, and then it went. So, yep, definitely a cliffhanger there. We are talking to Anthony Reich with the Israel Report, talking about the funeral that was held yesterday for the teen who was killed in the Jerusalem bombing. We wanted to get an update from Anthony. What is the situation there, and how is it being handled by Israel? This is, of course, the first bombings that have happened for some time. It is 7:45. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem. It's 101.9 Chai FM. And, of course, that story as well about Iran blaming the loss, the Soccer World Cup loss on Israel, as well, of course, as the other allies, because it's their fault. So we're seeing a lot of very strange things coming out of Iran at the moment as they struggle to contain what is going on there. It is 7:45. We'll be back after this.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
It is 7:47. I'm Howard Feldman. We were just struggling with the line there. Anthony Reich, good morning. Are you back with us?
Okay, Tov, we're back. I think I can hear you well now.
Yeah.
So we were just about to talk about the events of yesterday with the kidnapping of the body of that Israeli teenager in Jenin that we discussed in yesterday's chat that we had with you. It turns out that the body of Tiran Ferro, who was a Druze teenager involved in a car accident near to Jenin, it appears that he actually was alive when he came out of the car accident. And the latest reports that I've seen have suggested that he was in quite serious condition in a hospital in Jenin when the gunmen broke into the hospital and kidnapped him. So it seems as if though that he was alive when he was taken. He has subsequently passed away. I'm guessing as a result of the kidnapping, because he was being ventilated in the hospital and he was being treated for quite serious injuries. And he has subsequently passed away. Only earlier this morning was his body released back to his family. it seems as if though a gunman who broke into the hospital and kidnapped him thought that he was an Israeli IDF soldier. And instead of being a teenager, which is what he was, so he certainly wasn't a soldier. I think that was some case of mistaken identity to some degree. But unfortunately, in the process, he has died. Now the government has finally succeeded in releasing his body. The latest I read was that the body still has yet to reach the family, but I assume that they will hold his funeral later today. So a relatively positive outcome to a very, very unhappy set of events, and one wonders to what extent he might have been saved, his life might have been saved, if he was allowed to remain in the hospital and be treated. That's a discussion for another day. Of course, we also, during the broadcast yesterday, had live events going on in Jerusalem with those two terror attacks that took place in Jerusalem, and now we're able to take a step back and just see what happened yesterday. The first thing I would like to talk about is the death of Arya Shepok, who was 16 years old. He was a Canadian by birth, having immigrated to Israel, living in the Har Nof neighborhood of Jerusalem. Apparently woke up yesterday morning not feeling so well, spoke to his Rosh Yeshiva about whether he should come to Yeshiva or not. In the end, he decided that he was feeling well enough to go to Yeshiva, a decision that ultimately led to his death, because he was sitting at the bus stop just inside the entrance to Jerusalem near to the central bus station when that explosion took place. We understand that the explosive device may well have been on a motorcycle. There were some people who were talking about seeing a bag that had been left near the bus stop, but the latest report suggests that that probably wasn't the explosion, the explosive device, that it was on a motorcycle. And of course, we also spoke about the explosion that took place at the Ramot interchange, also at a bus stop. I mentioned the fact that it looked as if that there'd been shrapnel in the bus. The whole windscreen of the bus on TV looked like it had been damaged. Well, we are told that these two explosive devices may well have been left by the same individual. And as of now, the Israeli security services have no idea who was responsible for this, because ironically, none of the terror organizations who usually come forward when these kind of events take place, none of them have come forward to take responsibility. They've all praised very highly the explosions that took place in Jerusalem, or celebrations around where these terror organizations operate. But none of them actually standing up and saying, this was us or one of our operatives. So as of now, the Israeli security services are still not sure who exactly was responsible, whether it was someone from one of the well-known terror organizations, whether it was an individual acting on their own or at the behest of one of the organizations. They think that that both of the explosive devices might have been planted by the same person. There was even a theory that this individual was riding around Jerusalem on an electric bicycle, having been first to the entrance to Jerusalem to place that explosive device at the near to the central bus station at that bus stop, and then having proceeded on to the Ramot interchange, Tzomet Ramot, to place the explosive device at that bus stop. Something like 20 people were injured in those explosions. The explosions, apparently the explosive devices, were loaded with metal nails, and screws, bolts, were actually put into the explosive device to try to create as much of an effect, as much damage as possible. And I suspect that that's probably, when I said I looked like shrapnel hit the windscreen, that's probably what we were talking about, those bolts having been expelled from the explosive device, obviously at very, very extreme speeds, and having damaged the bus. There was also glass lying all over the road, so it seems as though some of the bus's windows were broken in the process. Approximately 20 people injured, some of them still quite seriously injured. Arya Shepok was the one casualty, at least to date. His funeral was held yesterday, where he was eulogized by his Rosh Yeshiva, who said that it was only because he decided to overcome his feeling of illness and to make the effort to come to Yeshiva instead of staying home and recovering that that's really what put him in the line of danger. The Canadian ambassador to Israel and the Canadian prime minister have both spoken out against these terror attacks, and have mentioned the Canadian citizen who unfortunately was killed in the process, 16 years old, really an unnecessary death, something that could easily have been avoided. It's just not something that we need to have to live with. And, you know, we had the discussion yesterday about where this takes the possibility of a two-state solution, because a situation like this clearly doesn't promote the idea of the two-state solution.
What's been the reaction in Israel? Because I would imagine there's a fair amount of criticism of the fact that this was even allowed to happen.
So there hasn't been a great deal of criticism leveled at the outgoing government or the outgoing Prime Minister Yair Lapid. And in fact, the Chief of General Staff, the IDF Chief of General Staff, Aviv Kochavi, is currently on a trip to the United States, and he's decided to cut short his trip to the United States after getting a situation briefing yesterday. And he will be returning home today to take control of whatever the IDF are up to. There hasn't been any politically maligned outfall from this event. And as of now, because the security services don't even really have an idea as to who carried out the attack, most of the effort and most of the focus is on trying to work out who did this and how they managed to do it. And once those answers come forth, I suspect that there might well be some political implications. There might be some questions asked. There may be some comments made directed towards the security and the political sphere about how such a thing took place. Naturally, the incoming Prime Minister Netanyahu visited the hospital yesterday to visit the wounded who were admitted to the hospitals in Jerusalem. Yair Lapid also not only eulogized the young teenager who was killed, but indeed spoke about those who'd been injured. So at the moment, there's a fairly unified response, even though and the country still remains politically split in a very, very dramatic fashion following the recent election. But we haven't seen responses down political lines, at least not yet. I suspect that that may well still be something that we will look forward to during the course of next week.
Absolutely, there's no doubt about that. The Israeli High Court of Justice is continuing to accept Utah civil marriages by video for now. Just give us some background.
So this was something that we discussed a few months ago, where some Israelis, especially during the period of Corona, found a workaround solution to get married without the need to leave the country. And why the need to leave the country? Because Israel's laws at the moment do not allow for civil marriages. So anybody who wants to get married in Israel needs to get married according to religious law. And religious law dictates that only two Jews or two Muslims or two Christians can marry one another, and that there are no allowances for a Jew who wishes to marry somebody who is not a Jew. And that's how the laws in Israel work right now. And even when two Jews wish to get married to one another in Israel, some of them feel that they don't want to be married according to the Rabbanut. So the only real equivalent of a so-called quickie marriage or a civil marriage, which isn't really a civil marriage, but it's a quick one, is if two individuals who are Jews go along to the Rabbanut, bring proof of the fact that each of them are Jewish halachically, and once that proof has been lodged, they can go to the Rabbanut, they will put up a chuppah for them, they will have the chuppah and kiddushin at the Rabbanut, they will do it very quickly, they will be issued with their documentation, and they will go home married. That's how things work here, and similarly within the Muslim and the Christian community. So those people who either don't want to subscribe to that or wish to marry across religious lines are forced to leave Israel, go and get married elsewhere, bring a marriage certificate back to Israel, and then the local authorities, the Interior Ministry, the Population Registry will recognize that marriage, because the laws say that marriages that are conducted outside of Israel are recognized for the purposes of the Interior Ministry in Israel. And therein lies the little loophole that the video weddings managed to somehow take advantage of, because the U.S. state of Utah set up video weddings during the time of Corona. And for all intents and purposes, that is recognized as a marriage that takes place in the state of Utah, even though it's done over video. And they get a marriage certificate from the state of Utah saying that those two individuals got married effectively in Utah. And up until now, the Interior Ministry has been forced to register those marriages because it complies with Israeli law. It's a marriage that took place outside of Israel. It has to be married, recognized inside Israel. And so more and more people have now taken up on the video wedding option that the state of Utah offers. And this has gone to, this was first heard by a court in Lod, which actually ruled that these marriages need to be recognized by the Interior Ministry. That has now gone to the High Court of Justice. And on Tuesday, the High Court of Justice rejected a request by the Attorney General to postpone recognition of these civil marriages. And for now, at least, the High Court of Justice has said it's status quo. So they haven't said this is a final decision. The court rules that we are forced to recognize these video weddings, but the court has said that at least for now, until a final decision is made, these marriages are forced to be recognized by the Interior Ministry. Now, it's interesting because the outgoing government was very enthusiastic about supporting this. The incoming government, less so. And this is where we feel the differences between what the outgoing government represented and what the incoming government is going to represent. In some way, this is a very practical idea because, for example, members of the LGBT community are very, very eager to take advantage of these on video weddings by the state of Utah. Many of them have done so, and their marriages are registered by the Interior Ministry. So it's a very, very interesting little dilemma that the state of Israel is having to confront at the moment.
Yeah, and one that really, as you say, does illustrate the difference in approaches, and that's what makes it a relevant and interesting story. That's all we have time for, unfortunately. Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, thank you for an excellent week of reporting through some very, very difficult incidents. Wishing you a Shabbat Shalom, a great weekend, and we'll catch you on Monday morning. It's 8 o'clock. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.